The Dow Jones nosedived 1,700 points, joining the S&P and NASDAQ in having their biggest drop since 2020. So, worst day for our economy since COVID. Just a little reminder, this time, he's the disease.
Somebody hand me a mask. Please.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Elsewhere in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ. In Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us, I guess. Good news to start the day, I guess. After a two-day bloodbath on Wall Street last week, the S&P 500 did not end more than 4% down. It only ended a point or two down, which means that it didn't see its third straight day of losses of 4% or greater, which, had that happened again on Monday, it would have been the first time since the Great Depression in 1933 that the S&P notched such back-to-back-to-back consecutive losses, and only the third time in history the broader market finished 4% or lower for three straight days, all of which happened when they did happen were during the Great Depression. So we haven't crossed that Rubicon just yet on the market. Instead, it was a roller coaster on Monday, dropping by about 6 points as trading began, then skyrocketing up to plus 3 or 4%. On the mere rumors that Trump was prepared to blink on his dumb tariffs, before the market then crashed again when that rumor was dismissed by the White House, only to see the markets then claw their way up and down to another down day across the board. But compared to last Thursday and Friday, Monday's losses were perhaps the best Wall Street news that they've had, certainly in several days, and the best they might have hoped for right now, as Trump threatens still higher tariffs against China. Higher even than the 54% sanctions he's already put in place against them, as China reciprocated by slapping U.S. exports with the same penalty last week. And Europe and Canada prepared to do the same to the U.S. as well. Even as Americans with 401ks and other investments and retirement funds in the market have seen about, $7 or $8 trillion in value just disappear since Trump's so-called Liberation Day last week, when he slapped sanctions on damn near every nation in the world for a perceived grievance against them that virtually no economist in the world actually shares.
It's a Liberation Day from your money is what it sounded like.
Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
Basically, because wealthy and populous America buys more from these other world countries than they do from us. Donald Trump considers that trade deficit to be some sort of punishment against us that he's going to get him back for. Now, even Republicans, at least some of them anyway, are finally beginning to push back on this idiocy. A Republican legal organization funded by the one of the not dead Koch brothers and by right wing federal court puppet master Leonard Leo are actually suing to remove Trump's tariffing authority to take that away from him. Far-right manosphere dudes like Joe Rogan is seemingly unhappy with Trump's trade war, as is right-wing media darling Ben Shapiro, who's usually able to come up with any excuse to support anything that his buddy Donald Trump does. But on the tariffs, even Ben Shapiro was apparently unhappy last week.
Here's the thing. The president's vision of international trade is, I am sorry to say, mistaken. The president seems to believe that international trade is a zero-sum game, that every trade deficit someone is getting screwed is a zero-sum view of how economies work, and it's not true. As Thomas Sowell points out, the eminent economist, quote, if the goods and services available to the American people are greater as a result of international trade, then Americans are wealthier, not poorer, regardless of whether there is a deficit or a surplus in the international balance of trade. In fact, I can name you a period in American history where there was a fairly large surplus in America's balance of trade. The entire Great Depression.
By the way, that was Ben Shapiro. He actually speaks that fast. We didn't speed it up at all. That's how fast he talks on the radio.
It is true. He does speak very fast.
Now, also, clownish hedge fund billionaire Bill Ackman, who went all in for Donald Trump last year, he warns now that Trump was losing the confidence of business leaders that he should pause his trade war. Quote, the president has an opportunity to call a 90-day timeout, he said in a post on X, to resolve trade issues via negotiations. He said, quote, if on the other hand, we launch economic nuclear war on every country in the world, business investment will grind to a halt, consumers will close their wallets and pocketbooks, and we will severely damage our reputation with the rest of the world. That will take years and potentially decades to rehabilitate. Well, that's right, Bill. Now, you didn't know that he was going to do that last year when you were shoveling millions of dollars in his direction to help him get elected? When he was saying he was going to do exactly what he has now done? Hope you lose a lot of money, Bill. Sorry, not sorry. Even Ronald Reagan was trying to send a message from beyond the grave to Donald Trump. Here's the former president in 1988, back when I guess Trump was too busy hanging out with Jeffrey Epstein and little girls to notice Reagan's warning.
Our peaceful trading partners are not our enemies. They are our allies. We should beware of the demagogues who are ready to declare a trade war against our friends, weakening our economy, on national security, and the entire free world, all while cynically waving the American flag.
So that was Ronald Reagan trying to say that exactly what Donald Trump is doing now is a terrible idea. And yes, it comes wrapped in the American flag. So is there anyone out there, anyone within earshot of my voice, in our live Southern California listening area? We've got one of the strongest transmitters west of the Mississippi, or anywhere across the globe listening via kpfk.org to the web stream today. Anyone out there who's willing to defend this nightmare? Anyone who voted for Donald Trump knowing that he intended to use tariffs as a weapon, as a sanction against friend and foe alike, just as he promised throughout his campaign, just as he's doing right now, forcing the greatest single shot to the U.S. and world economy that has ever been carried out by a U.S. president? Is there anyone out there who's willing to defend what he's doing right now? To explain to me and to our listeners why he's doing it? To explain why it's a good thing for the U.S.? How it puts America first? Much less makes it great again? Anyone? If so, give me a call, 818-985-5735. I will put you right at the top of the caller list. I might even stop whatever else I happen to be talking about to take your call, to give you airtime, to explain this madness and what I must be missing about the economic prowess of this super genius who declared bankruptcy six times and couldn't run a casino without running it into the ground. Are you kidding me? I know you're listening out there because I hear from you. I hear from you Trump supporters via Twitter and email. We had tons of Trump supporters who were willing to call in before the election to explain why they supported Donald Trump. Are you guys still out there? Do you still support him? Do you still think he's what he's doing on tariffs is a good idea? Do you like laying off tens of thousands of federal workers, critical federal workers, slashing Social Security and Medicaid, ending cancer research programs, and the tracking of diseases in the U.S. and around the world? Do you actually think that's a good idea? Give me a call. Is there anybody left who is willing to defend Donald Trump? Because I know you're out there. I see that he still has approval ratings among Republicans around 90%, even as his approval ratings continue to plummet among independents. It can't really plummet too far among Democrats because his approval ratings were already around 3 or 4% in an all-time low for members of an opposition party this early in a presidency. But I know you're out there. You used to want to call in. So you get another chance today because while I know some listeners will disagree, I actually think it's important to continue this conversation. And I think some of you may be having buyer's remorse right now. And if so, I'd love to hear from you too. If you voted for Donald Trump and you don't feel like defending him, as a matter of fact, you're not feeling too great about that vote right now, I'd love to hear from you. Perhaps you especially. My number is 818-985-5735 in our live Southern California listening area or from anywhere around the world if you're listening via kpfk.org. I really would love to hear from you, though it's been impossible not to notice over these past 10 or 11 weeks since he's been in office again that it has become harder and harder to find anyone who is at least, you know, willing to come on these airwaves to defend the worst, most incompetent, most dangerous, most un-American, most authoritarian president by a mile that we have ever had. But I will put you right at the top of the call list, and I'll even give you the chance to explain your position. I will try to be nice, because I really would love to hear from you. I really would love to understand if there is anything beyond pure idolatry and cult worship that would lead you to support a man so opposed to everything that America stands for that he's now sending out thugs to sweep people off of the streets and disappear them into foreign gulags, in direct violation of court orders, and of course, the Constitution. I would really love to hear a legitimate explanation for why that's a good thing, why that makes us great again. So I would imagine would hundreds of millions of your fellow countrymen at this point. 818-985-KPFK. And if, as expected, Trump supporters, even those who supported him last November but don't anymore, if they don't feel like calling in today for some reason, then I'm also happy to hear from everyone else, especially those who have who may have attended one of the huge rallies over the weekend in more than 1,000 cities in all 50 states and even in several other countries over the weekend, demanding hands off our critical federal agencies by the Trump administration, hands off of mass deportation programs, hands-off LGBTQ rights and anti-discrimination programs and public schools and colleges and universities and the right to free speech and to legal representation, hands-off our unions and our Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, hands-off our democracy and our electoral system, hands-off our Constitution. And while we're at it, hands off our states and our friends in Canada and Greenland and Panama and the rest of the world, except oddly enough for Russia, with whom Donald Trump has declared an unwinnable trade war. Hands off that. So how'd those rallies go for you? What did you learn? Did you learn anything? Were there good crowds? Sure looked like it. Were folks in a good mood? Was it good to get back out there among people who really do actually love this nation and what it supposedly stands for, which Donald Trump and his supporters don't seem to have a clue about? 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK. I see that the phones were ringing, Des, but are we having problems with the phones at this point?
We're not sure. We are checking to see if there is a problem with the phone, but we'll let you know. But so far, it seems to be working. Yes, mostly, and no.
Okay. Well, let me know. In the meantime, I got plenty to talk about as well. Speaking of mass deportations to foreign gulags. In the nearly 30 days now since Maryland resident Kilmar Armando Abrego Garcia was supposedly mistakenly deported to a notoriously violent prison in El Salvador, according to AP, his young autistic son has sought comfort in the scent of his missing father's clothes. Abrego Garcia's wife said in court documents last week, quote, although he cannot speak, he shows me how much he missed Kilmar. He has been finding Kilmar's work shirts and smelling them to smell Kilmar's familiar scent. He has been crying and acting out more than usual, she said. The 29-year-old Abrego Garcia was pulled over in an IKEA parking lot and arrested on March 12 with his 5-year-old autistic son in the car with him at the time. Trump's administration acknowledged or claimed last week that sending Abrego Garcia to his native El Salvador was a, quote, administrative error. But now that he is in El Salvador's custody, apparently there was just nothing they could do about it. An immigration judge back in 2019 had granted him protection from being deported back to El Salvador, where Abrego Garcia was likely to face persecution by local gangs who had previously threatened him and his family, leading him to flee the U.S., where he received protection from deportation from the courts. He got married to a U.S. citizen, had a child with her, a child that now misses his father very, very much. Well, in a dramatic series of court rulings and reaction to those rulings on Friday and into the weekend and into today, U.S. District Judge Paula Sinas had set a deadline of 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday night this week for the Trump administration to arrange the return of Abrego Garcia. He was on one of the three March 15 flights that hauled deportees to a notorious El Salvadoran prison. His was the only flight that was not carried out under the Alien Enemies Act, the 1798 law that Donald Trump is attempting to use to imprison these people. The White House reacted obnoxiously in response to the judge's order. On Friday, the White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt saying, quote, we suggest the judge contact El Salvador's President Bukele because we are unaware of the judge having jurisdiction or authority over the country of El Salvador, unquote. The DOJ immediately appealed the judge's order to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, which had not yet intervened as of Monday, and then sought an emergency intervention from its friends on the U.S. Supreme Court. Thus, leapfrogging the Alien Enemies Act deportations. Garcia was on one of the three flights, but not the one that wasn't carried out under Trump's absurd invocation of the 1798 wartime law. Thus leapfrogging the Alien Enemies Act as the case most likely to lead to President Trump defying the judicial branch, that, according to TPM's David Kurtz today, we shall see. In a written opinion on Saturday explaining her Friday ruling from the bench, Judge Sinas wrote, quote, defendants seized Abrego Garcia without any lawful authority, held him in three separate domestic detention centers without legal basis, failed to present him to any immigration judge or officer, and forcibly transported him to El Salvador in direct contravention of the Immigration and Nationality Act. Once there, she writes, U.S. officials secured his detention in a facility that by design deprives its detainees of adequate food, water, and shelter, fosters routine violence, and places him with his persecutors. with the administration now claiming, oh, well, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. He's no longer in our custody. El Salvador has him again. Sorry, too bad. Well, Georgetown University law professor Steve Vladek looked at the case and the power that the judicial branch has in this situation, concluding, quote, federal courts may not have the power to compel the release of an individual from a foreign prison, but they unquestionably have the power to order the U.S. government to take whatever steps it can to effectuate the same result. And of course, Donald Trump claims all the time that he has all sorts of power over foreign countries, that he can make them do anything. But for some reason, he can't do this. Oh, sorry, we made a deal. We gave you money to take our prisoners off of our hands. They're not prisoners. They're migrants. But to take them off our hands. But we can't tell you to give one of them back, I guess. Nonetheless, an hour or so before airtime today, in response to the administration's emergency plea to SCOTUS, Chief Justice John Roberts has placed a temporary administrative hold on the lower court's order as the Supreme Court decides if they will, in fact, step in and take this case. In the meantime, Attorney General Pam Bondi and Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche, one of Trump's personal criminal defense lawyers, who he has now made Deputy AG, quickly moved to suspend the DOJ lawyer who was tapped to argue the Abrego-Garcia case last week on behalf of the administration. Erez Rouveni, the acting deputy director for the Office of Immigration Litigation, and his supervisor were both put on administrative leave after the court's ruling last Friday. Rouveni was quite candid with Judge Sinas during Friday's hearing, as attorneys on all sides of any case are supposed to be with the court, including even when lawyers sometimes are recalcitrant or have problematic clients who are being uncooperative or lacking in candor or hiding the ball from their own counsel. Well, that was the case here, as the client happens to be the federal government, who failed to be forthcoming about how Abrego Garcia was deported in the first place, despite his protective status and despite the judge trying to figure out what the hell even went on here. At one point, Rouveni, the government attorney, reportedly told the frustrated judge that he also could not figure out why the Trump administration had not sought Abrego Garcia's return, saying, honestly, quote, when this case landed on my desk, I asked my clients that very question. I have not received to date an answer that I find satisfactory. Well, that honesty in court before a federal judge was apparently enough to get Rouveni sent to figurative El Salvadorian gulags, as he was placed on administrative leave, according to the attorney general. Quote, at my direction, every Department of Justice attorney is required to zealously advocate on behalf of the United States, Bondi told the New York Times. Any attorney who fails to abide by this direction will face consequences. Well, I think he was zealously advocating on behalf of the United States. What he wasn't willing to do was to lie in court. In other words, any Justice Department official who does not lie to federal judges on behalf of the Trump administration will be removed from office, apparently. Anyone who voted for Donald Trump because he promised mass deportations now willing to call in and defend what the administration has done here? Defend what they have done to Abrego Garcia, who was supposed to be protected from this, who has who's married, has a 5-year-old autistic child? 818-985-5735. And again, I see the lights going on and off, Des. I don't want to harangue people to call us if we're not able to take calls.
Well, we do have one call that is available that has made it through. So we're still trying to figure out what the problem might be. Okay. But we do have a caller.
Okay. Well, but not a Trump-supporting caller yet.
No, not yet.
All right. 818-985-KPFK. Keep trying. We'll try to get you in. I know people are trying to get through. Figures. Figures, the one time I have I leave time for calls. Anyway, we'll see. We'll see if we can get to whoever we can get to. But the most stunning court news that I do want to make sure to get to, I've got some other news, but I'm going to skip ahead to this one because I want to make sure that we get to this one, the most stunning since we last spoke, particularly for those of us who, you know, still believe in democracy and elections and such. So the most stunning court news since we last spoke was not actually a federal court ruling, but a state court ruling for now anyway, out of North Carolina, where a three-judge state court panel ruled on Friday to disenfranchise tens of thousands of lawful voters in the state's Supreme Court election from last November, at least disenfranchise them unless they can somehow fix their voter registrations over the next 15 days. The panel of judges here, composed of two Republican judges and a Democratic judge, overturned a lower court's decision that had protected the ballots and some 60,000 voters who cast them and had dismissed challenges by Republican Supreme Court candidate Jefferson Griffin. He lost last November to incumbent Democratic Supreme Court Justice Allison Riggs by 734 votes in the statewide and presidential elections in North Carolina last year. That loss was confirmed via several recounts demanded by Griffin, and he's entitled to them. And it was also affirmed by the state election board. Nonetheless, Griffin has continued his challenge, claiming that some 60,000 lawfully cast votes last year were actually cast somehow unlawfully in what was clearly meant as the Trump playbook in North Carolina. Had Trump lost the closely divided battleground state? Because it seems like Griffin was, boy, was he ready to go. He was ready with this challenge to 60,000 voters kind of out of nowhere because Donald Trump won. So, of course, that election was totally fair for him, if not, apparently, for Jefferson Griffin. Justice Riggs said in a statement following the gobsmacking ruling on Friday that she, quote, will be promptly appealing this deeply misinformed decision that threatens to disenfranchise more than 65,000 lawful voters and sets a dangerous precedent, allowing disappointed politicians to thwart the will of the people. North Carolinians elected me to keep my seat, and I swore an oath to the Constitution and the rule of law, she said, so I will continue to stand up for the rights of voters in this state and stand in the way of those who would take power from the people. Riggs said she expected the dispute to ultimately be decided by the federal courts. For the moment, Riggs and the North Carolina State Board of Elections have appealed the appellate court ruling to the GOP-dominated state Supreme Court, the court that Riggs actually sits on, and that Griffin is hoping to make even more GOP-dominated by, yes, stealing one of the two seats that are currently held by Democrats. Republicans hold five of those seats in the in North Carolina at the state Supreme Court. Griffin hopes to force a 6-1 Republican majority on that court by disenfranchising some 60,000 state voters, but only on his race. The court's ruling would not change the results of any other contests that these very same voters voted on. These voters who Griffin is claiming to be unlawful voters, well, their votes will count in the presidential race and in congressional races and in local races around the state, just not on Griffin's race for the Supreme Court. Does that make any sense to you? Of course it doesn't, because it is absurd. Bob Phillips, the executive director of the nonpartisan voting rights organization Common Cause North Carolina, called the ruling a, quote, shameful decision in favor of sore loser Jefferson Griffin. This poorly conceived decision is an extreme overreach and sides with a sore loser candidate over the citizens of our state, said Phillips. If allowed to stand, the ruling would inject chaos into North Carolina's elections in ways that could disenfranchise tens of thousands of lawful voters and invite similar challenges nationwide. So what happened here exactly? Well, at the heart of the issue is the North Carolina State Board of Elections decision to count, yes, count, 60,000 ballots that were cast by voters with allegedly incomplete registrations. For example, if they hadn't submitted a driver's license or a Social Security number along with the registration, because, for example, they registered before that became a requirement of state law in North Carolina. So those people are who Jefferson Griffin is calling unlawful voters, but only in his race. And then there are several thousand more ballots cast by overseas voters who did not provide their photo ID with their absentee ballots because they were not told they needed to do so. Or by overseas voters who never resided in North Carolina at all. For example, they are children of U.S. citizens from North Carolina who are living overseas, who Republicans are suddenly challenging as unqualified to vote at all in North Carolina. But of course, only in the Supreme Court vote, apparently. There are other votes on the same ballot in the very same election. Those are all just fine, apparently. Yes, this is what they are actually doing in an election that happened 6 months ago, that has been decided through several recounts and by the State Board of Elections, has been certified and yet has been challenged in court, and they may actually toss 60,000 ballots, voters' votes from this race in order to allow Jefferson Griffin, the Republican candidate in North Carolina for the state Supreme Court, to steal a seat on that court. According to the appeals court ruling, the roughly 60,000 voters with incomplete voter registrations will be given 15 days to fix their ballots, as will military and overseas voters who did not provide photo ID. Ballots cast by North Carolina residents who live overseas but have never lived in the state will simply not be counted at all. There is nothing that they can do. One of the GOP judges in the majority on the appeals court ruling, Judge Fred Gore, actually ran a joint campaign with Jefferson Griffin and other GOP appellate court candidates back in 2020. They ran together in a, quote, joint campaign. It was the first time the judges actually campaigned together on a party platform. And, of course, Judge Gore did not think that was reason to recuse himself from overseeing this challenge by his friend. In his lengthy dissent, Democratic Judge Toby Hampson wrote, quote, changing the rules by which these lawful voters took part in our electoral process after the election to discard their otherwise valid votes in an attempt to alter the outcome of only one race among many on the ballot is directly counter to law, equity, and the Constitution. Hampson described a series of scenarios in which people's vote will be disenfranchised. Voters, for example, who died since Election Day. Well, they're going to be unable to drive into the headquarters, to the county headquarters, and present their photo ID. Should they be disenfranchised? Voters who have moved since Election Day. Service members living abroad in unsafe locations who are, quote, unable to jump through the judicial hoops that the majority now puts in their way. Imagine if Democrats did that to Republicans, made it harder for overseas military members to have their vote count in an election that has already happened. The judge wrote in dissent, quote, make no mistake, should the majority's decision be implemented, the impact will be to disenfranchise North Carolina voters, even though they were eligible to vote on Election Day. The case next goes to the state Supreme Court, on which Republicans, as I noted, maintain a 5-2 majority. However, Justice Riggs has recused herself from the case, as she should. So there'll only be 6 judges hearing the appeal. That could result in a 3-3 split ruling, in which case the lower appeals court ruling would stand. The Riggs campaign is now forced to try and notify more than 60,000 voters over 2 weeks' time that their vote from an election almost 6 months ago will be stolen from them, even though none of them actually broke the rules or the laws by casting their vote in that election. Yes, this is as twisted as it sounds. And by the way, Griffin is only challenging voters without a proper ID with their registration. He's only challenging voters who voted by mail. If they voted in person, but they don't have a driver's license or social security number on their voter registration, apparently that's just fine. Yes, it is this insane. And it is actually happening here in the United States of America. You guys okay with, you Trump voters okay with that? The cure period does not begin immediately, according to the Raleigh News and Observer. First, the case will go back to the lower Wake County Superior Court, which had ruled against Griffin back in February. From there, the trial court was instructed to direct all 100 county boards of elections to, quote, expeditiously identify and notify the challenged voters. Just amazing. Riggs has said if she loses at the state court level, she intends to return the case to the federal court, where there is hope, according to national election law experts. For example, UCLA's Rick Hassan, who argues on his election law blog that the state court, quote, appeared to violate constitutional due process in changing the rules for a state election after the fact, after the election had been held. The state courts may be violating federal law by disenfranchising voters in this way, he said. The chair of the state Democratic Party said that North Carolina Democrats will fight that decision in this case brought by Griffin and the North Carolina GOP and the Republican National Committee, all of whom are trying to steal an election and test the waters for future election denial, according to the chair of the state Democratic Party. I would add for future election theft, because if they can do it here, well, they can do it anywhere, can't they? Looks like we got our phones working again, Desi Doyen.
Yes, we
good.
Do. They've
all
been
right.
Reset.
Good to go. Good to go. Okay, good. Now I got to get to a break, and then I will come back. So if you're on the lines, hang on. If you haven't called in yet, 818-985-5735. We've got a few of them open. I do want to note here that the State Board of Elections in North Carolina advises voters who may be concerned that their registration form is somehow incomplete that they should go ahead and submit an updated voter registration form right away. There is a website called thegriffinlist.com that has been set up to find out if you or someone you know is at risk of losing their vote, being disenfranchised by this North Carolina Supreme Court candidate. You can search for names and areas in the state from Jefferson Griffin's hit list of voters that he hopes to disqualify. It's easy to use. It's searchable. TheGriffinList.com. So, yeah, Trump supporters claim the 2020 election was rigged against Donald Trump. Despite any lack of evidence to support that claim, I know you're out there. You used to call all the time. So do you want to defend Republican efforts to rig the election from last year's election in North Carolina? Or would you like to stand with me against this attempt to steal an election before our very eyes? I would love to hear from you either way. 818-985-5735, 818-KPFK. We will take a quick break. And we will come back if we can find any Trump callers out there. 818-985-KPFK. I'm Brad Friedman. You're listening to The Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently, without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Do call me. 818-985-5735. Welcome back to The Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Okay, we've got One or two callers who are willing to defend Donald Trump, 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Santa Monica. Is this Dan? Hello? Oh, it's John. John. Hi, John.
Okay.
Okay.
As an independent who voted for Trump.
You're an independent? Who did you vote for 4 years ago?
I voted for Trump as well.
Who'd you vote for
I voted for Ralph Nader.
Oh, okay. All right. Was Ralph Nader running in 2016?
No, before that.
Who'd you vote for in 2016? Well, just to establish.
Let's focus on the tariff question, please.
Oh, well, hang on. It's my show. I appreciate you calling in, but you said you're an independent, so I'm just trying to establish you're an independent who's voted for Donald Trump over the last 12 years. Okay.
Okay. So what? Let's talk about tariffs.
Go ahead.
I'm coming from a moral point of view.
Okay.
Do you think $2 a day is a legitimate wage for the guys that make Apple phones?
In most countries, I would say no, that is not.
Okay, that's what the Chinese pay, according to 60 Minutes, that did a big expose on Apple about a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
Do you think the working and labor conditions let's focus on China.
Hang
let's
on. Well, on let me China, let me answer your first question. Thing. We'll get to your second one. So as far as the $2 labor, Donald Trump spent about 50 minutes last Liberation Day on Wednesday explaining why he was doing these tariffs. I don't believe he mentioned slave labor in China or anywhere else, did he?
No, but the result
okay.
is this.
Okay. Yeah.
If you want to have fair wage coffee, fair wage whatever, I'm a union worker, then you have to say Americans need to learn that they have to hire people with a fair wage, benefits, and cost of living.
Uh-huh.
And that is not China.
Right. So even though Donald Trump did not mention that, even though Donald Trump did not say, hey, if you pay a fair wage, because, you know, he's been gutting the NLRB. Donald Trump hates unions. He hates fair wages and all of that in our country. But you're saying in China, he wants those fair wages for people in China. And that's why he's doing these tariffs, John?
Why don't you ask the opinion of a UAW worker? They're loving it. They're loving it.
Well, actually, I don't know. We'll
yes,
see
we
how
are.
Much they love it. But that wasn't
worker.
The question.
Okay.
But that wasn't the question. The question was, why didn't Donald Trump mention anything about fair wages and working conditions for people in China while he has been gutting them here for American workers? Can you explain
well,
that?
Well, I don't have the answer to that
okay.
question, but I'm
okay.
looking at the net effect. I'm looking at the net effect of his policy.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do you think we should make steel? I'm a welder.
Yeah.
Do you think we should make steel in America?
Of course, I think we should make everything in America that there is a market
well,
for,
I'll,
sure.
I'll tell you what. The United Steelworker, President of the United Steelworkers,
yeah.
and this was even 15 years ago,
yeah.
he said the steelworkers could come to work for free, and we still couldn't beat the dumping practices of China, South Korea, and Russia
yeah.
and Brazil.
Okay, that's great. That said, Donald Trump doesn't seem to be actually targeting his tariffs on any of that. He hasn't given conditions. In other words, he hasn't given conditions for if you do X, I will do Y in order to end these tariffs. Instead, he has cratered the stock market. I'm glad you have nothing in the stock market, I guess, so you're fine with that, right?
He said he would do reciprocal tariffs.
But he didn't do that. But he didn't.
No, but it's ongoing.
But he didn't.
This has only been going for a week.
John, he put the
he
put the tariffs in place. He held up a chart in the Rose Garden, and he said, this is how much they are tariffing us, so therefore, this is how much we're going to tariff them. Right? You saw that chart.
Half of the other tariff.
What was that first column on that chart? Do you know what it was where it said these are the tariffs that he's charging? Do you have any idea what that number actually was? For example, he said that Europe was tariffing the U.S. 39%. Did you know there was a 39% tariff on goods coming from the U.S. to Europe? 39%?
Well, You raise a good topic because I doubt any Americans, any average American knows anything about tariffs and what with tariffs.
So
I'm in the film business.
John, that's
we have lost the motion picture industry.
Okay,
in
John.
Let's stay on government subsidies.
John, I noticed that when you can't answer a question, you try to bring up an entirely different topic. Can you stop doing that? John,
I'm sticking
John,
to government
John,
subsidies, government
we're not
tariffs.
I'll go to other people. I tried to put you first because you always called so late. I tried to put you first. My point was that number, 39%. Of the tariff that Europe is putting on us, that he showed in this Rose Garden, said this is why we must put this huge tariff on Europe. Do you know what that 39% stood for? That he told us was a tariff. What was that 39%?
Well, he is.
Do you know? Just say yes or no.
Non-tariff barriers.
Do you know?
Non-tariff barriers.
Okay. That you think they were non-tariff barriers? Is that what you think that 39% was, John?
There are non-tariff barriers
John,
in all these countries.
You're not going to stick to the discussion, are you? Is that what you...
I am sticking to the discussion. You're the one evasive.
Oh, my God. John.
He is saying,
I will match your tariff. Okay.
And he's cutting it by 50.
Right. Those aren't tariffs. 39% is not the tariffs that Europe charges against the U.S. 39%, shut up, and I will tell you, 39% is the trade deficit between the U.S. and Europe. In other words, we buy more stuff from them than they buy from us. It has nothing to do with tariffs. It has nothing to do with reciprocal tariffs because they don't tariff us 39%. So he lied about these tariffs. You're lying for him by claiming it has something to do with sweatshops in China.
You don't support tariffs, Nancy Pelosi.
Excellent. Thanks, John. I appreciate the call. There's got to be somebody out there who is actually able to defend these tariffs without making stuff up. I mean, that 90% of the Republican Party, according to a recent Gallup poll that I read, still support Donald Trump. Granted, that poll was taken before Donald Trump cratered the world economy last week. But still, 90% is a lot of people. You'd think they'd be able to call in and defend him. Looks like 818-985-KPFK, if it is you. And if you're not as obnoxious and, you know, making stuff up and lying and trying to shout over me as John was, then I'll be happy to talk to you. Let me go to Alan in Los Angeles. Hey, Alan, welcome to the broadcast, sir. Oh, Alan, do we have Alan there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Oh, unfortunately, you're rather dim.
It's been said.
The phone.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the volume. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. I'll try to take into account. I can't hear you well, but my hearing isn't so good anyway. First of all, I barely heard what was the last caller, but I think a lot of
you would have enjoyed it.
Supporters don't like to phone in because you do effectively show up their arguments, right?
Mm, well.
Many MAGA supporters are not articulate. But on the other hand, foaming at the mouth will work even over the truth, especially when they are, you know, like the only ones with the microphone.
Yeah.
Now, I am not for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I want us all to demonstrate, organize, do everything we can to stop a man who will only stop if he is stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, to quote Roger Ailes, who was very approving of him, he just keeps going like the everlasting battery bunny.
Yeah.
You encounter that steamrolling aggression every time you try to argue with a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
The truth, and this is what we have to realize, the truth is not what they are arguing. It is their sheer will to dominate. Now, here's my point,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's made very clearly in the theme of Leni Riefenstahl's famous 1930 film made for the Nazi Party.
Mm-hmm.
It was called The Will to Power,
mm-hmm.
and it works. You don't need reality anymore with these people. If anyone, if everyone united makes the same lie, this is how they end up winning. That's the premise also of 1984. We all claim Germany is wonderful, even if we are all secretly uneasy about where we're going. But all it takes is for all of us, or all of them, plus those of us who are, well, what else can we do to, you know, not to get in trouble? If we all decide that, you know, we're going to take over Europe, then we do take over Europe. It's not about the truth. It's about the sheer will to power.
It is, Alan. And hang on, let me just respond, because I got to get going. I got some other folks who want to get in, but I think you're making excellent points. I completely agree with you here. That's what they're trying to do, to basically, you know, muscle their way into power and beyond, muscle away the Constitution. And I think understanding that is critical. And I think you make an excellent point. I think hearing it from these guys, you know, I'm perfectly willing to have a conversation about Donald Trump, what he's doing, what he's not doing, with somebody who can simply have a conversation about it without yelling and screaming and trying to, as you put it, Alan, dominate the conversation with lies and nonsense. Surely there is a reason for supporting these tariffs. Surely someone has one that they can make the case for it. They shouldn't have to shout over me in order to make it, and they wouldn't have to shout over me to make it if they were just, you know, telling the truth instead of demonstrable lies. So that's where we are. Alan, I think you have put it very smartly. I really appreciate your call. I hope you can hear any of this, because I know you said I heard it was dim. Okay, good. We'll try to get the phones fixed. We are always trying to, but we'll try to do it next time. Thanks, Alan. Please don't be a stranger. Call in anytime.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to George. And again, all men. What's with the sausage party here, Dez? Where are all my ladies? All right, let me go to George. Hey, George, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Thank you. All I wanted to do was congratulate Donald Trump for replacing Jimmy Carter as the worst president the nation has ever seen.
Well, I will half agree with you on that one. No, I don't believe that Jimmy Carter was the worst president that this country has ever seen. Do you really believe that, or are you just saying that he's replaced him on the most most hated lists?
No, I can't think of a worse president than Jimmy Carter and or Trump.
Really? What didn't,
in my lifetime?
Yeah, what didn't you like about Jimmy Carter? As long as I can't have anybody telling me what they didn't like about what they like about Trump, what didn't you like about Carter?
Terrible inflation that cost me a lot of money.
Ah, and so if Donald Trump causes inflation, you're going to hate him even more.
Absolutely, okay. Because I think Trump is an idiot.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I give Carter credit for the Egyptian settlement.
Okay. And I wish I was better informed, frankly, on the reasons for inflation during the Carter era to try and rebut that, because I know a lot of people also blamed Joe Biden for inflation, which was huge during his most of his 4 years. But the fact was, that wasn't his fault. That really wasn't his fault.
No,
it was what he inherited from the previous administrations.
I think the pandemic caused the inflation in the Carter administration, in the Biden administration.
Yeah, clearly. Thank you for being a well-reasoned person who I may or may not fully agree with. I really appreciate the call, George. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thanks.
All right. 818-985-KPFK. Oh, we're already running up against the back of the hour, are we, Desiree?
And, yes, we are.
And I noticed you were making a point. Thank you, by the way, for struggling to get the phones working there. Whatever
it's been
was going on,
so.
It's been crazy in the control room there. But You had a comment about John, I noticed.
John had made, as you said, he sort of invented something that Trump did not say in his announcement about tariffs, about the fact that that he wanted to somehow that would address slave labor wages in China, which, you know, that's a very complex question. And I understand, I guess, the idea of it. But does that mean since Trump imposed tariffs on uninhabited islands that are uninhabited by humans and only penguins, is he trying to say that the penguins are not paying a fair wage or something?
Well, you know.
So it doesn't quite logically follow.
Nobody wants sweatshop conditions for penguins. That's one thing I will say. Secondly, I will say, if Donald Trump hates the sweatshops in China so much, it sure is odd that he buys so much of his merchandise and other crap that he sells to his American supporters from China, like those hats, like that Bible coming straight from China. What's up with that?
Yeah.
It's almost like slave wages in China had nothing to do with Donald Trump's interest in trying to subjugate the rest of the world to his domination.
Yeah, and I would just add one more thing, that even if Trump does, you know, he's been very erratic on these tariffs, but even if he does drop them and we somehow avoid a recession, the damage has been done. I mean, other nations are probably not going to ever trust the United States again to hold to any agreement ever, and that's a long-term shift.
I know I wouldn't. All right, let me go one more. We have time for just one mo. See what I did there? Morris in Long Beach, haven't heard from you in a while. How are you, my friend? You doing okay?
Fantastic, Debbie. First of all, I want to say first they came for me, Debbie, and then they came for you, and then they came for Mickey Mouse. And when they got Mickey Mouse, it was over, Debbie. So we're going to have to do some kind of pushback on what this guy is doing in the White House. And what we're going to do is call Occupy the White House this summer. I'll talk later, Debbie, and thanks for the platform.
Okay, thank you, Morris. Occupy the White House. Did he just say that on our show? I would like to mention, we are not in favor of occupying the White House here on the broadcast, at least not unlawfully. And what are we going to do, by the way? I didn't even have time to get into it. Huge crowds over the weekend in more than 12,000 locations across the country. And yes, even major cities around the world protesting hands off Donald Trump, hands off Elon Musk,
peaceful
our Constitution,
protests.
And everywhere else. Yep, peaceful protests. Go figure. Nobody had to storm the barricades and break into the U.S. Capitol to try to make their point. Anyway, my point is I got to get out of here. Thanks to all the folks who called in, and including those who got dumped when we had trouble with the calls there. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It's always an honor and greatly appreciated. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it for free anytime from bradblog.com. Thanks to those of you who support our work there. Thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to my board operator, Wendell the Handyman Handel, and to all of you. We will see you at, you can find me on the social medias until we meet again. I am the Brad Blog at pretty much all of them, but especially at Blue Sky. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.